Hey, thanks for spending time with me. Rusnowski here. This is Porchlight. Yeah, time is relative, but not infinite, and so our continuing obsession with how we're spending it. That's where technology can help, supposedly. Saves us considerable amounts of time, boiling water, traveling 1,000 miles, which leads immediately to the challenge of deciding what to do with all that added bounty. Oh, it's got you there. Because another attractive feature of technology is that it offers us more options on how to spend the time we save. The taut stress point here, oddly enough, becomes leisure time. You're listening to the radio. Thank you, sincerely, since I know how many more media choices you have than if I had expressed my gratitude even 10 years ago. And one of those choices might just be a book. Printed words that require hours of commitment and do not rely heavily on illustration. Not e-book, a book. Made of paper, not plastic. The only energy required and used generated by a single reader. A book is durable and portable, which is to say it will still work just fine 30 years from now, and you can loan it to a friend along with your recommendation and maybe not even care if you get it back. And there's another thing that's distinctive about a book that provides a contrast to other modern forms of media. Books can range from the relatively cheap, yard sales, rummage stores, to the absolutely free, the public library. Accessing this vast resource, now totaling nearly 130 million titles, does not involve a contract, or a network, or a download, but it does involve an extraordinary investment you may not even remember making. But congratulations on the return. Once upon a time, you learned how to read.
You can't judge apple by looking at a tree. You can't judge honey by looking at the bee. You can't judge a daughter by looking at the mother. Book by looking at the cover. Oh, can't you see? Oh, you misjudged me. I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. Can't judge the book by looking at the cover. I gotta say, you got your radio turned down too low. Turn it up. Ow. You can't judge sugar by looking at the cane. You can't judge a woman by looking at her man. You can't judge a sister by looking at her brother. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Oh, can't you see? Oh, you misjudged me. Well, I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. Can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Come on. You can't judge right from looking at the wrong. You can't judge one by looking at the other. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Oh, can't you see? Oh, you can't judge me. Ain't like a farmer, but I'm a lover. Can't judge a book
by looking at the cover.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, rolling high and mighty traps, pounced with fire on flaming roads, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, proud neath heated brow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half-racked prejudice leaped forth, ripped down all hate, I screamed. Lies that life is black and white spoke for my skull, I dreamed. Romantic facts of musketeers foundationed deep somehow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Girls' faces form the forward path from phony jealousy to memorizing politics of ancient history. Flung down by corpse evangelists, unthought of though somehow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. A self-ordained professor's tongue, too serious to fool, spouted out that liberty is just equality in school. Equality, I spoke the word as if a wedding vow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. In a soldier's stance, I aimed my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach, fearing not I'd become my enemy in the instant that I preach. My existence led by confusion boats, mutiny from stern to bow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Yes, my guard stood hard when abstract threats, too noble to neglect, deceived me into thinking I had something to protect. Good and bad, I define these terms quite clear, no doubt somehow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Bo and Bob there. Nice to match them up, since each had the foresight and the arrogance to write self-titled songs about themselves. And, of course, in Bob's case, an autobiography. Working in music has prepared me in many ways for this time spent with you, not least of which by introducing me to the time-honored tradition of copping licks. Supposedly, when he was coming up, Ry Cooder would watch old bluesmen play live, then go backstage and pay them $5 to teach him their signature guitar riffs. And so it is with Porchlight, minus the gratuity. A visit with Bish, obviously, and the Great Wall of Wisdom, a feature inspired by my guest on Party of Two, Margaret Taylor, owner of the Book Corner in downtown Bloomington. Next to Margaret's desk in the rear of the store, a majestic floor-to-ceiling display of Penguin classics, over 1,400 titles from various authors, cultures, and time periods. Often I'll go there just to bask in the glow. Margaret did the math for me once on how long it would take to scale the wall if you read one book a week. Nope. And I'm probably not going to visit all the national parks either. The only one in the store young enough to actually consider it was Patty's daughter, Carson. She was noncommittal.
Up to a few years ago, we were called a Penguin Classic store, and they've done away with that. I was told by the sales rep for Penguin Books that there were 12 bookstores in the country that had the whole line, and he had never even seen them. But years ago, they would color code them. The red, British authors, and the yellow was Italian, and Roman authors were in purple. And a few are still on the shelf like that. Why are these here? What are they? It's like finding water in a desert. This is educated people, people that are traveling, people that know books or don't know books. They're just amazed. They're shocked, impressed, overwhelmed. We take their pictures back here with them, or they have their friends take their pictures. They're posted online. It just sort of takes their breath away.
Margaret, you have been running an independent bookstore for well over 50 years. And you've seen a lot of change. I want to ask you first about your family and that tradition of running a bookstore and being involved in books. How did that start?
My dad, the day he hit town, he started selling newspapers for a gentleman for the Indianapolis Star. And he was responsible for putting food on the table for his mother and father and four children. My dad went to Bloomington High School. There was just one, and he was 16 when he graduated, so that was 1926. He went to Indiana University, and while he attended IU, then he was maintaining this business on the side of selling newspapers and magazines. He had a company then that he started called Bloomington Service News Agency. Then the Book Nook was opened in 1949. And my dad always regretted taking the name because people confuse the Book Nook with the Hoagie Carmichael Book Nook. And those are separate entities. So the Hoagie Carmichael was where the Starbucks and the old Gables. And then I guess they went out of business or whatever. That changed. My father picked up the name of the Book Nook. And then that was at 522 East Kirkwood Street. This store, the Book Corner, opened in 64.
You have granddaughters now. Could you tell me what that experience is like for you? Because now you have two little children who are discovering reading.
It's hard because I want him to own one of everything. When I had my three kids, each of my three children had to have their own copy of Winnie the Pooh and their own copy of Charlotte's Web. And it got pretty expensive. And then my little granddaughter, who's 2.5, she's moving into books. And the older one now is reading. And it's like, I'm sending her a box of books, you know, a month because you need to have these.
Well, you say you need to have these. Talk about that commitment.
You need to have them in your soul. I mean, you need to read them to experience them. Well, you have to have Charlotte's Web. You have to read this book. You have to have The Giving Tree. You have to have Marie Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are. I mean, you would just be so empty inside if you didn't have these things. And it's like food. You have got to have this. There's no question. You have milk and you have books.
See the deer. Has the deer a little doe?
Why, certainly. $2. Oh! Oh! Concentrate!
For this postcard home, the postmark reads Green Castle, Pennsylvania. I want to tell a little story on Margaret's dad. When I first arrived in Bloomington in 1976, James Spaneth was still operating the book nook, seated himself right behind the counter. At the time, the book nook served as Bloomington's gateway to the world. Mr. Spaneth carried daily editions of the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune, and also a number of foreign language periodicals. He was responsible for introducing me and many others to writers like Henry Miller and Gertrude Stein through New Directions paperbacks. I still have those books. Mr. Spaneth also printed postcards of his adopted hometown, so I think he'd probably appreciate this one. An interior view of Carl's Bookstore in the small town of Greencastle, Pennsylvania. How perfectly American is that? Jimmy Stewart's father was a shopkeeper in a small Pennsylvania town around the same time. The postcard picture of Carl's Bookstore isn't tight enough to see the titles on the shelves, and, as you might guess, Carl's is no longer in business. But let's speculate on a possible order of events, shall we? The groundbreaking novel Ulysses by James Joyce was banned in the United States for over a dozen years after it first appeared in print. Mailed copies from Sylvia Beach's Paris bookstore were actually burned by the U.S. Postal Service. In 1933, a federal court case appropriately titled The United States versus a Book Called Ulysses declared the book not to be obscene. 1933 also happened to be the year that the owner of Carl's bookstore, Mr. Pitt Fessenden Carl, died. Hard to say whether old Pitt obtained a legal shipment for his customers, staunchly refused to carry the novel, or just died never having to decide the matter. Mr. Spaneth, he would have carried the boxes in himself.
Winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun. And the colors of the sea bind your eyes with trembling mermaids, and you touch the distant beaches with tales of brave Ulysses, how his naked ears were tortured by the sirens sweet. The sparkling waves are calling you to kiss the white lace lips. And you see a girl's brown body dancing through the turquoise, and her footprints make you follow where the sky loves the sea. And when your fingers find her, she drowns you in her body, carving deep blue ripples in the tissues of your mind. Tiny purple fishes run laughing through your fingers, and you want to take her with you to the hard land of the winter. Fishes run laughing through your fingers, and you want to take her with you to the hard land of the winter.
based on a novel by a man named Lear, and I need a job, so I want to be a paperback writer.
Paperback writer!
It's a dirty story of a dirty man, and his clinging wife doesn't understand. His son is working for the Daily Mail. It's a steady job, but he wants to be a paperback writer.
Hey, nice to be with you. You're listening to Porchlight with Tom Rusnowski. Production support for this program comes from Smithville at smithville.com and from Gilbert Construction, remodeling homes since 1994.
Look around again. It's the same old circle you see. It's got to be it sits right here on page 43 that you should grab a hold of it. And you should sip of it.
Two out of three, or four, depending on whether you're including Neil Young in that equation, David Crosby from an album he did with Graham Nash. Page 43. Doesn't mention the title, though. Then Fairport Convention. Full complement there, which means with Sandy Denny. Oh boy. The book song. A small framed portrait, a lighted candle, corner shrine for one Helen Hooven Stanmeyer. I believe that everybody who's drawn breath has at least one great novel inside of them. How you're able to translate what you've experienced is crucial, of course. But just to bear fair witness to historic events, to unique lives and situations you may encounter, that's essential stuff. Put this together with the sage advice of always writing what you know, and it's surprising anyone can produce a novel worth reading before they hit 30. certainly many authors have. Jack London, Carson McCullers, D.H. Lawrence. Relative youth, after all, can provide relative advantages for a wide variety of endeavors. Take parenting, for example. A friend of mine who first became a father when he was 42 told me that as much joy as his daughter had brought into his life, he understood well within her first year why procreation is designed for your early 20s. Sleep deprivation, randomly hoisting a squirming 25-pound weight. One day it's, oh, my back. Next day, oh, my nerves. Helen Hooven Stanmeyer never became a parent. During her prime childbearing years, she was completely committed to her dream of becoming a novelist. She completed and published her first novel, Herbs and Apples, when she was 29. It was nearly 400 pages and received favorable notices in the New York Times Review of Books and the New Republic. Helen's next novel was published 4 years later. Her third did not find a publisher. While continuing to spend her life close to books, first as an English teacher, then as a librarian, Helen also continued to bear witness, especially to daily life in the small town of Xenia, Ohio. After her retirement, she wrote a personal memoir set in her hometown. Ohio State University Press published it, and it found a home on library shelves throughout the state. Apparently, over that half century, Helen had stocked quite a root cellar. In 1982, when she was well into her 80s, Helen's third published novel appeared. It was entitled And Ladies of the Club. It spanned 60 years of life in Xenia, Ohio, and was over 1,400 pages long. This time around, Helen's book made the New York Times front page and topped its bestseller list. Just a few years left for Helen to enjoy the ride. To be sure, a different destination than the other authors mentioned here. None of them got to see past 50. That last sentence, that last word, then a period. With Helen, no question about it. That's all she wrote.
Down
Home built for reading books. Imagine that. Well, houses constructed between 1900 and 1930 had features that both anticipated and supported the activity. Window seats and screened sleeping porches on the second floor, fireplaces and built-in bookshelves in the living room. Keep in mind that while phonographs and radios were prominent in homes in the 1920s, they still allowed for reading. Eyes here, ears there. Before television, you actually had to leave the home for a stage show or a movie that would engage both senses together. Back then, people learned to read for the same reason some individuals learned to play a musical instrument. That's how leisure time was created and spent. When the day was done, folks generally headed back home. They'd already been out in the world. After dark, they were looking to absorb it on their own terms.
If you listen to the show quite a bit, you know we like to go back way back and pull out some standards that have been with us for so many decades. And it's still around, but you don't hear them as often as you probably should. One of them is When Day Is Done, a tune written by Buddy De Silva back in 1926. Al Cohn on tenor saxophone, Herb Ellis on guitar, Monty Budwig on bass, Jimmy Smith on drums. When Day Is Done, that's from an album on the Concord label entitled Standards of Excellence. Indeed, that's true in Cohn's case, and the other three as well.
Okay, you love recorded music. You love movies. Well, then you probably love talking about them as much as listening or watching. This would include making up and then arguing over lists of favorites. A little earlier in our visit, Phil Rizzuto's name came up. Some years ago, during a long rain delay, Phil and his broadcast partner, maybe Jerry Coleman, were speculating on the greatest Yankee outfield of all time. The list finally proffered was Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, and Joe DiMaggio. Phil responded, "Oh, golly, I don't know. I think there's some folks out there who'll be disappointed we left off Babe Ruth." So, you see the problem. Nevertheless, the desert island debate is always fun. I know just enough about movies and music to be confident I'd leave something essential out of the satchel. I don't know nearly as much about books, but I do believe they would provide fine company and complete solitude. A selection of 25 titles, maybe, chosen by someone I like personally who's read a lot more than I have. Shouldn't be too hard to find that. Now, complete solitude? Well, that's why it's a fantasy. The parting word, then, to a book lover with a hard life and a fabulous sense of humor. If Oscar Wilde ever left his list of favorites behind, please send it along. Quote, It is what you read when you don't have to that determines what you will be when you can't help it. And so, next time.
I read a lot nowadays, much more than before you left me high and dry in a loveless land with nothing but time on my hand. I read a lot, not just magazines, but other more serious things to get me through the day. Nighttime too, whilst wondering how in the world to go on without you. Lonely isn't the word for me now. Blue doesn't describe it somehow. Population one, that's me. So if you ask me how I stop contemplating what I now have not, I'll reply a lot.
Production support for Porch Light with Tom Rusnowski comes from Smithville. Fiber internet, streaming TV, home security and automation in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. And from Gilbert Construction, specializing in restoring, remodeling, and revitalizing Bloomington area homes since 1994. More information about Gilbert Construction by calling 812-876-8110 or on the web at gilbertbuilt.us. Porch Light is engineered by our radio audio director, Mike Pascash. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Visit us at wfiu.org/porchlight.